the headlines this hour. The Russian President Vladimir Putin accuses the West of pushing Ukraine into conflict with Russia, warning against any interference in that country. Syria says it reserves the right to respond to Israeli aggression, hours after several Syrian soldiers were killed in Israeli missile strikes near Damascus. Nine Palestinians hold the funeral of a young man who was fatally shot by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Thanks for joining us. Tensions between Moscow and the West over Ukraine show no sign of abating. The Russian president has not vowed to give a swift response to countries attempting to interfere in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin said that Russia had already taken decisions on how to react in such situations. He accused the West of pushing Ukraine into conflict with Russia. Putin underlined that Western countries wanted to cut Russia into pieces. The Russian president made the comments while addressing lawmakers in St. Petersburg. Russia reports several blasts in the country's south and a fire at an ammunition depot in the city of Belgorod as the war with Ukraine is in its 63rd day. Local Russian officials say the explosions caused no casualties or damages and that the blaze had been extinguished. Ukraine has not directly claimed responsibility but described the incident as a payback for Russia's war on its neighbor. Belgorod has been targeted several times by Ukrainian forces since the start of the conflict. Meanwhile, Russia says it has hit an arms depot in southeastern Ukraine with missiles. The Russian Defense Ministry says the depot in Zaporizhzhia was used to store weapons supplied by the U.S. and European countries to Kyiv. Moscow halts supplies to Poland and Bulgaria after the two countries refused to pay for Russian energy exports in rubles. The move by the energy giant Gazprom has raised further tensions in Europe, which is heavily reliant on Russian gas. In a statement, the company says supplies will not resume until Sofia and Warsaw abide by the new terms. That refers to President Vladimir Putin's announcement last month that unfriendly countries will have to pay for their gas in rubles or would risk losing gas supplies. Meanwhile, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov has rejected the accusation of using natural gas as a tool of blackmail, saying that Russia remains a reliable supplier of gas and oil. Reaction came after Ukraine blamed Moscow for using its energy to, quote, shatter the unity of its Western allies. Paolo Raffone, the Secretary General of the SIPI Foundation, says the halt of Russia's gas deliveries will push up prices and negatively affect the economic situation across Europe.
Well, there is no doubt that the suspension of supplies of gas to European countries, for the time being only Poland and Bulgaria, will increase the price of gas in Europe and therefore the inflationary trend. And this will certainly have an immediate effect on the livelihood and the conditions of the economy in the entire Eurozone. And we already see that the euro is slipping down to the dollar every day. There will be maybe some kind of raise in interest rates by the ECB sometime in June, July, but it will be late and small because they know very well that if they raise it, they will hit the enormous debt that several European nations have. So it is a way to conduct the war through economic means, which is specular to the one that the Europeans have done to Russia through the so-called sanctions.
Russia bars more than 280 British lawmakers from entering the country in a tit-for-tat move and in the latest repercussion of the UK's measures over the Russian operation in Ukraine. The Foreign Ministry says the restriction is in response to a similar measure taken by London last month against 380 Russian MPs. The ministry has also accused the banned British lawmakers from the Commons of, quote, fueling unwarranted Russophobic hysteria. The UK had blacklisted Russian lawmakers for voting to recognize the independence of the two breakaway Ukrainian regions of Luhansk and Donetsk. London then claimed that the recognition gave Russia a pretext to invade Ukraine. Russia has been hit by an unprecedented wave of sanctions by the US, the EU, and some of their allies since the launch of its war in late February. Syria has slammed yet another deadly Israeli missile strike on the country, warning that it reserves the right to respond to the aggression. Syria's foreign ministry, in two identical letters, has urged the UN General Assembly and the Security Council to stop Israeli crimes. Damascus has also warned of serious consequences if Israeli continued violation of the agreement on disengagement that was signed in 1974. Wednesday's Israeli raid near Damascus killed four soldiers and injured three others. Israel frequently targets Syria with airstrikes, especially military installations and forces battling foreign-backed terror groups. The Syrian government calls those attacks violation of the country's sovereignty. Palestinian and Syrian artists have participated in an exhibition in Damascus to mark International Goods Day with the aim of stressing the role of art and culture in promoting the Palestinian cause. Our correspondent Muhammad Ali reports from the Syrian capital.
A fine arts exhibition has been held in Damascus marking International Quds Day in collaboration between the Syrian and Palestinian fine arts unions as well as the Iranian Cultural Center. Participants showcased many paintings that focused on Palestinians' adherence to their rights despite the brutal acts of Israeli occupation forces.
On God's Day, our work interpreted the fact that God is our cause and that it's become an international cause. We're participating to stress the importance of Palestinian identity and that God is the capital of Palestine.
We expressed through our paintings the Palestinian struggle, uprisings happening now, and all forms of our people's resistance, whether in stones, hands, or weapons. The exhibition is a reflection of Palestinians' reality in the eyes of the artists.
Political and cultural figures toured the exhibition, underlining the pivotal role such events play in countering Israeli attempts to erase Palestinian culture.
Resistance can be in armed struggle as well as in culture, media, art, politics, and popular movements. Art has a main role in our battle in unifying the people and embodying the steadfastness of Palestinians.
There is an Israeli attempt to change the shape of Jerusalem al-Quds, not just through Judaizing the population, but by replacing Palestinian culture and giving an impression that the history of Quds is Jewish. This is why it is important to highlight the Palestinian identity, culture, and resistance.
Quds International Day, set by late Imam Khomeini in Ramadan every year, has been a day of unified action by millions of people who wish to express solidarity with Palestine.
Artists use their artwork to visualize Palestinians' struggle and resistance against Israel. It's a message they are sending in their own way on Quds Day, hoping they help attract the attention of the international community to Palestinians' decades-long suffering. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Hundreds of people attend the funeral of a young Palestinian man who was fatally shot by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank on Tuesday. The victim was shot in the head during an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp. Three others were also sustained injuries during the attack. Since last month, Israeli forces have been intensifying their crackdowns across the occupied territories, including the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds. Palestinians have also been carrying out retaliatory attacks. Al-Aqsa Mosque has been a flashpoint during the holy month of Ramadan and ahead of International Quds Day. The Israeli escalation has drawn strong condemnations from Muslim countries. Iran's capital, Tehran, has hosted a summit of solidarity with Palestinians. The event also discussed the ongoing Israeli raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which have drawn worldwide condemnation. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Palestine belongs to Palestinians. This is what activists here at Tehran's Imam Sadegh University say in a summit dubbed Palestine's referendum. While many initiatives have been proposed to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, such as the two-state solution or the so-called deal of the century, the Islamic Republic calls for a referendum that allows Palestinians to decide their fate.
3 decades ago, our leader Ayatollah Khamenei proposed the idea of a referendum with the participation of Palestinian Jews, Christians and Muslims, and without the interference of Israel, and the resulting political system would determine how Palestine is ruled.
Initiatives that wouldn't lead to the liberation of Palestine are not a solution, but a dead end. 7 decades of occupation have showed that no soft measure has worked, and resistance and referendum are the only ways out of the current situation in Palestine.
Since the start of the holy month of Ramadan, tensions between Palestinians and Israelis have been running high, as Israeli forces have stepped up raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque, assaulting Muslim worshippers inside prayer halls and providing protection to the Israeli settlers, desecrating Islam's third holiest site. Observers warn that the escalating tensions in the occupied old city of Al-Quds could lead to another full-scale conflict between Palestinian resistance forces and Israel.
It is highly likely that this current crisis would lead to a war, as Hamas has warned of consequences if Israel presses ahead with its violence. In May last year, similar actions by Israel led to the 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime, during which Israel killed at least 260 Palestinians, but at the same time it suffered great losses from the resistance.
This event is held ahead of the International Quds Day, a global pro-Palestine rally that takes place every year on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan. The occasion seeks to bring the Palestinian cause to light, with the hope to mobilize a global action against Israel's continuous violation of Palestinians' rights.
While the UN has expressed deep concern over the escalating violence against Palestinians, activists here say this is not enough. They called on the international body to stop paying lip service and instead take action to keep Israel from any further breach of security in occupied Palestine. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran's president attaches significance to the expansion of long-term strategic ties with China, describing such relations as the Islamic Republic's definitive policy. Ibrahim Raisi says that Iran will develop relations with China based on mutual trust. Made the comments in a meeting with the Chinese Defense Minister Wei Feng in Tehran. Two sides also called for countering unilateralism, arguing it inhibits sustainable economic growth globally. The Chinese minister also said that boosting Tehran-Beijing ties will help improve security in the region and beyond. The passage of a U.S. warship through the sensitive Taiwan Strait is drawing protests from China, which is calling the move provocative. According to a statement by the Chinese military, the U.S. actions not only deliberately harm peace and stability in the waterway, but they also send the wrong signals to Taiwanese forces seeking independence. In response, the U.S. Navy has said that the warship only conducted a routine transit that is allowed under international law. China considers the island as its territory and views such U.S. activities as a sign of support for Taiwan. Washington has no diplomatic relations with Taiwan, but is the island's most important international supporter and arms supplier. The dust has settled after France's election, and many say the nation is not looking too well. A lackluster election has revealed extreme divisions, which President Emmanuel Macron may only worsen. Ramin Mazari has more from Paris.
With the re-election of President Emmanuel Macron, France's mainstream media has stopped worrying about fascism and started to honestly discuss the state of the country. A France divided is the most common headline. In 2017, Macron promised to not give France a reason to vote for the extremes of the political spectrum, but the far right and the far left have both grown to new highs.
It's a good thing Macron was re-elected. We need a young, efficient, pro-European president with a long-term vision. I'm surprised at the high score for the National Front, but in their economic program, they forget that it's the bosses who are in charge of salaries and not the president.
Le Pen won just 5% of the vote in the capital, while out of 101 departments, she carried 30 of them, mostly rural. She secured just one department in 2017. 80% of voters described the presidential campaign as being of poor quality, and few desired a rematch of 2017.
I didn't vote in the second round. In the first round, I voted for third place finisher Jean-Luc Mélenchon and decided to abstain. I think it's better that Macron won instead of Le Pen, who is too extreme right for me.
Macron's problem is that once again, he can't claim his win signifies a broad mandate for his proposals. Subtract 39% of the total electorate due to abstention and purposely spoiled ballots, and Macron's 58% of the vote falls to just 35% of the electorate. If we fairly assume that, like in 2017, 43% of his voters only did so to block Le Pen, then just 20% of the total electorate chose Macron for his policies or personality. That's a drop of 4 points from 2017. If Macron continues to rule as if his policies don't need a broad popular mandate, then France's permanent social unrest seems likely to continue.
A Le Pen victory would have set off immediate protests, but for now, a calm resignation is reigning. However, few expect the Paris street or the rural roundabout to remain quiet for very long. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
And that is it for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Sinto. 2 months.
Yani?
32. Bazaar. If you are living an ordinary life, like the rest of us do, you probably use plastic all the time. Whether you use your shampoo out of a plastic bottle, store food in plastic containers, eat your food off plastic plates, or work in an industry that utilizes a variety of plastic items, this material is all over your life in a million different ways. Plastics do have a bad reputation when it comes to environmental concerns. But some of them are recyclable and help streamline countless vital industries. For instance, the agriculture industry, which is essential to our society, relies on plastics in more ways than you can imagine. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In this show, we will look at the polyethylene plastic pipe sector and its developing market in Iran. Nowadays, PE products have become the industry standard in many sectors, including agriculture and construction industries. They are also rapidly expanding into new varieties and applications. In this program, we will explore some of the most effective and common applications of PE pipes and the amazing advancements of technology in manufacturing more efficient polyethylene products. We will also look at the impact PE pipes are having on the global economy. If you take a closer look at the agriculture industry, you notice there are countless ways to use plastic to improve the quality of the production process. One of the very useful and efficient plastics to use in agriculture is the irrigation pipe. In places like Iran, where water conservation is of high importance, drip and sprinkler irrigation pipes have played a very valuable and critical role. One of the leading manufacturers of PE pipes in Iran is Sabah Pipe Miane Company. They are located in West Azerbaijan province in the northwest of the country. This company was established in order to implement macro policies of improvement and productivity in the country's water industry. Nowadays, polyethylene pipes made in Iran are being used in the agricultural sector, water and sewage facilities, gas industries, and all national petrochemical and civil projects in the country. They are produced from polyethylene polymeric materials produced in Iranian petrochemical plants with high quality grades that are competitive with their foreign counterparts. These pipes are manufactured in various sizes and applications, and the local brand names of the industry represent the validity and quality index of these products. Based on recent data, Iran is the fourth largest producer of heavy polyethylene in the world. Currently, 26 million tons of HDPE is being produced in 13 large Iranian companies. Irrigation pipes are one of the most common uses for high-density polyethylene in the agriculture industry. HDPE is a common material for irrigation pipes because of its high resistance to corrosion and exceptional weather tolerance. According to experts, one quality that makes HDPE perfect for making irrigation pipes is its lightweight and flexibility. Setup is a breeze when you are using HDPE pipes. This material manages to maintain a lightweight while boasting a toughness that can stand up to even harsh conditions. As a bonus, irrigation pipes made of HDPE often come with long-term savings as they will not require nearly as much maintenance and repair as other irrigation pipe materials may need. Moreover, HDPE is watertight and has a strong molecular bond. These qualities make it perfect for use in high-pressure pipelines and drainage pipes. The industry also considers HDPE the best option for any underground water lines since it is non-toxic, tasteless and a green building material.
Iran is one of the hubs for manufacturing polyethylene pipes in West Asia. According to financial experts, some of these Iranian companies play a major role in international markets. Among these powerful Iranian companies, Sabah Pipe Miane strives to create value for all its stakeholders and to offer sustainable development for the country. On this path, it aims to meet the growing needs of domestic markets and at the same time explore the opportunity to get a share of export markets. Consistent with these goals, they are currently strengthening the marketing infrastructure and diversifying the production of their quality products by investing in R&D and specialized human resources.
Consistent with water conservation methods, sprinkler irrigation is an advanced way of irrigation by which water is sprayed through nozzles connected to a network of pipes with water supplied under high pressure. This method of irrigation has higher application and distribution efficiency and gains considerable savings of water. A large quantity of water can be passed through large diameter pipes with practically no transmission losses. By introducing the PO pipe transfer system, clubbed with sprinkler and drip irrigation for the crop, it is possible to expand irrigation facilities to a larger area with the same amount of water. Nowadays, conveyance of water through pipes, coupled with the use of pressurized irrigation methods, is practiced in many countries. Considering these characteristics and the recent water conservation trends in the world, the global market for the PE pipes is expected to grow in the years to come.
COVID-19 pandemic had a considerable impact on production of different types of polyolefin pipes, such as PE and plastomer. It created disruption in all end-use industries, such as construction and agriculture, among others. As a result, the demand for these pipes was reduced drastically. Manufacturing facilities were either forced to close due to government regulations or voluntarily due to lack of demand. All these factors caused a shrink in global market size, growth rate, and potential investment in the polyolefin pipe industries. Consumer spending also declined and for now seems to be limited to necessary daily products due to uncertain future situations. In Iran, though, the outbreak of the coronavirus, it has only a minimal effect on HDPE production, reducing it by just 3%.
According to financial institutions, the polyethylene pipes market is estimated to grow at an increasing rate of 4.8% for the forecast period of 2020 to 2027. Market is driven by the trend of repairing and replacing existing pipes for urban piping systems which have been obsolete. Ongoing rehabilitation and construction of old or obsolete urban pipe systems will drive the growth of the market in the mentioned forecast period. Asia-Pacific region is estimated to be the fastest-growing polyolefin pipes market during this time. Among China, Japan, South Korea, India, and the rest of Asia-Pacific region, China was the largest consumer of polyolefin pipe as of 2020 in terms of value as well as volume. Low cost of raw materials, as well as their ease of availability, along with low cost of establishing production facilities, are some of the major factors driving the polyolefin pipes market in this region. There is endless lamenting and an anxiety these days about plastic pollution and how to control it. You would think it was a new problem, but of course, along with all forms of pollution, the plastic waste challenge has been with us for a long time. But it was in the 70s that the environmentalist entrepreneur Doe Rossi noticed a business opportunity out of this situation and made a pledge to do something about it for future generations. What did he do? He created the so-called Pollywood by using recycled plastic and wood.
In this show, we will look at the wood plastic composite sector and its developing markets in Iran. Nowadays, products of this relatively new sector are all around us and rapidly expanding into new varieties and applications. In this program, we will discover how the never-ending expansion of Pollywood world is facilitating a shift towards a more sustainable environment and explore its role in economic growth.
as a response to sustainability trends and the need to preserve forests and prevent the destruction of the precious resources, we are witnessing the growing expansion of the plastic wood industry in the world. Accordingly, Polywood has been in Iranian markets for a couple of decades now. One of the leading manufacturers of this green product is a company that uses DecoWood as its brand name in Iran. With significant investment and up-to-date technical knowledge, this company has been able to produce different types of plastic wood profiles in various applications by making about 40 types of molds, which gives designers and architects more freedom in their designs. Wood polymer composites are a relatively new product. The current market of 220,000 tons per year has been developed over about 20 years of intense activity. In fact, according to some experts, the product can trace its roots to much earlier, with GOR producing woodstock for Fiat cars in 1972 and subsequently Sonesson AB producing PVC wood fiber floor tiles in Sweden in 1973. Since then, various research activities took place over the decades before the sector gained momentum in the 1990s, seeing four times growth between 1997 and 2000. The new momentum was provided by the dual purpose of replacing petrochemical materials with bio-derived sustainable materials and the need to reduce waste disposal by utilizing new recycling technologies. In this process, WPC was selected as a product into which waste paper or post-consumer plastics, such as used milk jugs, could be recycled. According to a consumer attitude research, the most common reason for the acceptance of wood plastic composites by Iranian consumers include its moisture resistance properties and the fact that it can replace a variety of wood products due to its durability and plasticity. However, its high price compared with compact wood panels has been monitored as a concern. The main vision of the founders of DecoWood Company has been to raise public awareness about this industry and its special benefits in environmental issues and protection of wood resources in the country. Therefore, with the intent to spread this important issue at the national level, the founders of this company have concentrated their investment activities in this industry and pride themselves on having produced and delivered high-quality products with wide variety of decorative and utilitarian applications. Because wood plastic composite starts as a paste, it can be molded to almost any shape and size, including arched or bent shapes. That innate flexibility extends to color as well, as it can be dyed or colored to fit almost any project design. Depending on if polyethylene or polypropylene the sawdust is mixed with, WPC can be used for a variety of construction projects in much the same way as natural lumber. Drilling, planing, sanding, it's all done just as easily with WPC. Some construction professionals believe that wood fasteners, like nails and screws, actually achieve a better hold in WPC as compared to normal wood, and WPC is likely to split or break when screws are used near the end of the planks, which can be a common problem when using real wood. The company we just mentioned represents only a part of a vibrant market in Iran, encompassing many other companies that take advantage of this environmentally friendly product. Together, they produce a wide range of building and decorative materials that have been used in private homes, hotels, offices, hospitals, commercial, and recreational settings. The array of manufactured products by the Iranian businesses include flooring and deck profiles, wall coverings, partitions, wall panels, rails and doors, and did we mention outdoor furniture? In fact, if you are planning to start a new construction project in the near future, then you should consider these new products that are surprising people all over the world. Most of the interest in many countries is concentrating on the durability and extended service life of WPC due to its large applications in outdoor use. Also, one of the greatest advantages of WPC products is their low maintenance cost as compared to that of solid wood. According to experts, WPC material has a production cost of about 15% more as compared to that of normal lumber, but requires a lower maintenance cost. The actual payback period is estimated at 3 to 5 years compared to pressure-treated decking material. What is most remarkable is the fact that used WPC can be recycled to create brand new WPC, making it the ultimate recyclable commodity. Wood plastic composites are capable of achieving a huge range of characteristics while always keeping one thing in common, which is sustainability. As consumer attitudes towards our responsibility to the planet are changing, smarter materials offer a way forward. Wood plastic composites, in fact, display an incredibly wide range of potential applications. By adjusting the species, size, and concentration of wood particles in the formulation, different outcomes can be achieved. Wood plastic composites can even be foamed to make a strong lightweight material. Similarly, the chosen wood species will also have an impact on the final product's color. Pine fillers tend to produce products that are lighter in color compared to hardwood fillers. This available range in the look and feel of products made from wood plastic composites offers a wide range of designer preferences. So far, product applications have included children's toys, automotive interiors, patio furniture, garden edging, and more. Furthermore, R&D products using biopolymers or biodegradable polymers have also been launched. These may be competitive either in the market for green consumerism, where 100% bio-derived product is well accepted, or in the market for disposable plastic items, as the search for an easily biodegradable product and the development of a waste industry capable of handling it continues.
All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague out there on the field who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
The viruses and bacteria that cause illness and death still exist and can be passed on to those who are not protected. Vaccination protects people from serious illness and complications of vaccine-preventable diseases, which can include amputation of an arm or leg, hospitalization, pneumonia, hearing loss, convulsions, brain damage, and death. Vaccines play an essential role in preventing the spread of infectious diseases and have saved millions of lives. And that's why in this week's feature program, we've visited
Razi Vaccine and Serum Research Institute, an Iranian pharmaceutical giant with almost a century of experience. And it's thanks to this institute and the medical and veterinary vaccines that it produces that Iranian people are protected against a wide range of different diseases, namely polio, mumps, measles, you know, scorpion venom, snake venom, to just name a few.
Dude began its activities in 1925. Its main focus back then was fighting Rinderpest, also known as cattle plague, a highly infectious viral disease that can destroy entire populations of cattle. Razi Institute put in the effort and developed a vaccine against this disease to eradicate it for good. And that was one of the first big steps in the history of Iran's biological industry. Today, the Institute produces a wide range of vaccines, both for humans and animals. There is a lot going on in this institute, and we cannot possibly cover everything, but we still try to give you a taste. Scorpion and snake antivenoms are one of the many products that are made here. In order to develop a vaccine, first we need snake and scorpion poison. There is an animal lab at this huge complex where venomous snakes and scorpions are kept. Honestly, the lab is quite scary, seeing all the snakes slither around us terrifying, especially when they hiss. What's more, they are not ordinary venomous reptiles. A team of researchers have done all their best to identify the most dangerous snakes and scorpions in Iran and bring them here to breed. In this room, and thanks to this dauntless man, the venom is extracted. He allows a snake to bite into a collecting receptacle in order to harvest the venom. By the way, if you feel bad for the snakes that are kept in this lab, you're not alone, but I guess it's for a greater cause. Anyway, the venom is then processed and turned into a vaccine. There's a stable kilometers away where healthy horses are kept. And it's thanks to these humble animals that we can have life-saving antivenoms. Horses take the jabs, and the antibodies released by their immune system to fight the damaging venom are harvested via bleeding. Then...
All right, the plasma extracted from the horse's blood that contains the antibody is carried via some portable tanks to this area, to this room. And the main process of extraction of the antibody takes place here. So the plasma, the liquid, first goes into this container. This is a pretty large container. The liquid is diluted, and then the pH is adjusted, and enzyme digestion takes place. Enzyme digestion is a process whereby the protein or the antibody breaks down into some parts. And the part that is needed in our anti-venom can be more easily extracted and purified. So the liquid that is now processed will leave this container and enter another container, which is quite similar to the first one, I guess. The main separation process comes out of the second container is a purified liquid with a high concentration of that antibody, or the part that is needed in anti-venom. And this antibody will help our immune system to fight the venom, basically. And after that, this liquid is poured into some portable, again, carriers and containers, and it will be transported to another lab, which is referred to as the formulation and filtration lab. Stick with me for more.
The antivenom products here are made from concentrated and purified hyperimmune horse plasma against several types of snakes and scorpions' venom. Vaccines have helped eradicate or reduce the burden of many diseases, such as smallpox, polio, measles, and mumps. And hopefully one day, COVID-19 will become a thing of the past as more and more vaccines become available to the public.
After the outbreak of COVID-19, this institute redirected its focus to developing a vaccine, an effective one, to reduce the number of deaths and infections in the country. And it has been successful. The vaccine is called RaziCovPars. It's a recombinant vaccine containing the COVID-19 spike protein, and it includes three doses. The first two are injectable, and the third is intranasal. The health ministry has approved this vaccine, and currently over 5 million doses of this vaccine are available to be administered, and many more doses are set to be produced soon. And despite all the progress that they have made, they're still working on improving this vaccine. Doctors, researchers, and managers at this institute see it as a work in progress. The central branch of Razi Serum and Vaccine Research Institute is quite large. It's comparable in size to a small village, really. And the thing is, there are six more branches spread across the country. Well, who knows what the next challenge would be for Razi? But whatever the challenge, one thing is guaranteed. Razi will rise to it and save lives.
We are almost out of time for this program, but before we go, let's briefly check out some news and trends about the developments for PE products in international markets.
According to recent media reports, if all planned, Iranian PE projects were to go ahead because of new Chinese investments, the country may export a cumulative 55 million tons of all three grades of PE products between 2020 and 2030. The data analysis shows that Iran could gain 48% of total Chinese HDPE imports by as early as 2025, up from 15% in 2000. The analysis assumes that Chinese support may not just mean new Iranian plants, but also the ability to run existing Iranian plants at higher rates due to China's technical support and its guarantee of a market.
Media reports indicate that the impact of Ukraine war on oil and gas supplies is likely to have consequences for European production, exports, and imports of polyethylene products.
According to ICIS, a key concern when it comes to the supply of PE products with relation to the Ukraine war is the availability of oil and gas. Polyolefins plants rely on sufficient energy supplies, and the sanctions imposed on Russia could destabilize access to it. In its report, ICIS mentions that there are discussions of Iran picking up the shortfall of crude oil that may result from sanctions on Russia. It explains that is the only major factor that can really dent in the oil price right now. It looks like it could come into the market fairly soon. Therefore, this could impact the cost of production of PE products and as a result, influence supply. That covers our program on the polyethylene pipes market. Don't forget to give us your feedback. Also, you can email us with your thoughts and topic suggestions. You never know, we might just make a program on your suggestions. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next time for another edition of Bozor.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
An analysis released recently shows that the CEOs of some of the largest corporations in the United States made 254 times more than their median employees in 2021, as executive bonuses and stock awards grew significantly. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Analysis Shows Top U.S. CEOs Made 254 times more than median workers in 2021. Here's the story. An analysis released recently shows that the CEOs of some of the largest corporations in the United States made 254 times more than their median employees in 2021, as executive bonuses and stock awards grew significantly. According to the latest edition of the Ecolar 100, an annual report that spotlights executive pay at leading U.S. companies, median total CEO compensation at top firms soared to $20 million in 2021, a nearly 31% increase from 2020. Increases were seen across all pay components, notes the new analysis, which lists the total compensation and CEO to median employee pay ratio of the 100 largest U.S. companies by revenue, a ranking that includes Apple, Microsoft, Raytheon, and Intel. While median salary and median perks increased incrementally, the largest jumps were examined in the form of cash bonuses and stock awards. The analysis notes the median value of stock awards increased by 22.7% in 2021, from $8.6 million to $10.5 million. Meanwhile, cash bonuses increased by 46.4% in 2021, from $2.8 million to $4.2 million. Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger topped the Ecolar 100 list with $177.9 million in total compensation in 2021, followed by Apple CEO Tim Cook, who took home $98.7 million last year, a 569% increase from 2020. Amid record-shattering corporate profits and surging CEO pay, typical workers continued to struggle in 2021 as the coronavirus kept spreading and rising prices of food, housing, and other necessities eroded their modest wage gains. As Bloomberg reported last month, employee compensation rose 11% in 2021, but the so-called labor share of national income, essentially the portion that's paid out as wages and salaries, fell back to pre-pandemic levels. Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, told CNBC recently that the new Ecolaris study shows corporations really just let loose in 2021 and were focused on keeping their executives happy and not worrying as much about what was happening on the worker end. Anderson said workers, many of whom are on the front lines of the crisis, have not been reaping the rewards. Ecolaris findings provide further evidence that the decades-long trend of soaring CEO compensation and largely stagnant worker pay is persisting as legislative efforts to narrow the gap go nowhere. According to the Economic Policy Institute, EPI, CEO pay in the U.S. rose 1,322% between 1978 and 2020, while typical worker pay grew just 18%. Recently, EPI and Harvard University's Shift Project released a company wage tracker that uses survey data to show employee wage distributions at nearly 70 large retail and food service companies, including Dollar General, Walmart, McDonald's, and other prominent corporations. At Starbucks, where workers have sparked a union organizing wave in recent months, 63% of workers mark below $15 an hour. EPI notes, at Dollar General and McDonald's, 92% and 89% of workers respectively make below $15 an hour. With nearly one in four workers making below $10 an hour at both companies, a majority, about 51% of workers, made below $15 an hour at Walmart. Ben Zipperer, an economist at EPI, said in a statement that low wages are a defining feature of the U.S. labor market, and the service sector in particular. Zipperer added, low pay is not limited to mom-and-pop stores. It is also widespread in big-box stores, restaurants, and grocery stores that often have high CEO pay and revenue. A higher minimum wage and unions can put corporate greed in check and raise wages throughout the labor market.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.